UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. A little switch up in the schedule for this evening, and I'm going to blame the man behind the glass, Igor Enriquez, my producer, and of course, Danny Riccio will be the one keeping me in time because I was under the impression the guests were in different order. But 3 seconds before I go on the air, I am told Roy Nelson will be joining us first. Misha Tate will be joining us shortly thereafter, and just so you know, Igor, I'm not allowed to cut off Roy Nelson, and you're not going to give me much of a choice. So I will hear about this from Roy and his lovely wife, manager, pal, friend, boss, Jessie, because she will beat me down, and I will gently beat you down when I come back after I meet with her. We'll also hear from Alex Ricci. He's competing on the Substance Combat Show, Cage Combat Show, in a couple of weeks. About 4 weeks' time, he'll be taking on Derek Gauthier. We'll hear from him, and then we'll be joined by SureDog.com's Jordan Breen to break down some of the headlines from the world of mixed martial arts, and chances are whatever Roy says and whatever Misha says, I will bring up with Jordan to see what happens from there. On the line right now is Big Country Roy Nelson. Roy, what's going on, my man?
Not much, just getting ready.
Getting ready?
Yep.
For
practice.
Yeah, so someone's training for their big fight versus Stipe Miocic. We'll get to that momentarily, but for those that don't know, Roy's got a record of 19-7, 3-fight win streak, all of which ended with his fists. Most recently, a first-round knockout of Chuck Congo, and for those that have been listening to the show, I've had beef with Roy Nelson since that fight because he technically promised me a flying armbar, or at least an attempt, and it didn't happen.
I tried. If they don't give you the arm, you can't take it.
Talk about the performance versus Chuck Congo, though. Obviously, it's something that was going into that fight. We had talked about, you know, the fact that throwing bombs with Roy Nelson is not necessarily a good idea, even if you're Chuck Congo. But did that fight play out the way it was supposed to play out for you, considering the game plan you had?
No, I was actually planning on, you know, taking it more to the ground, and but the ref broke us up, so, you know, I had to throw at least one punch.
Good point. This past week, while I was in Vegas, at Dana White's scrum, one of the things he mentioned that Roy Nelson is the smartest guy or smartest man on earth. Lo and behold, I see you at the event on Saturday night, and you got a huge pop. For those that don't know, when Roy Nelson walks into a building in Las Vegas, the arena generally erupts. Doesn't matter what's happening in the octagon. But you walked in the arena, you got a nice pop from the fans, but you had a shirt already made, smartest guy or smartest man on earth.
Yeah, no, I had a couple made. Actually, I wasn't able to see Dana to give him his, but I actually gave it to his bodyguard. Okay, and I don't know if he actually got it. And then I gave one to Ariel, and then I think Ariel might have gave it to Dana. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, he actually did present it to him, and he had a good laugh about it. But what's with Dana White? Is he still taking shots at you in that manner?
As far as I know, no. That's the first compliment I've heard in a long time. So I had to, you know, put it out on a T-shirt. I was so proud of it. It's like, you know, when anytime your parents give you, you know, good praise, you're like, you know, you just want to hear it and have everybody else know about it.
Now, at the same time, Dana and yourself and the relationship that you guys have, it's been, I guess, temperamental at best. He recently told us at the scrum there, or was actually, yeah, it was at the scrum, the pre-fight scrum, before the event went down, that you did not sign. I guess they offered you a contract and you turned it down?
No, I was never offered a contract. I think we were talking. As far as I know, I never actually saw an actual contract with terms, and I think that was called negotiations, if that makes any sense.
So they never offered you an extension to the current deal you have now? Because I believe you have one fight left on this deal?
I believe so. I don't handle the management side, but the business side. But I believe so. I should be up because I'm still on an Ultimate Fighter contract. So hopefully it should be up.
Yeah, to my understanding,
it's up.
So why is that?
Why am I praying that it's up?
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, out of the contract that I won, I want to win a new one.
So you want to win a new one. So a victory over Stipe Miocic will give you leverage, and you'll likely ask for more money.
I don't know if it'll give me more leverage. You don't have leverage with the UFC. That's not usually how it works.
So what is the end plan for you? What's the best scenario? Obviously, a victory over Stipe.
Victory over Stipe. That's pretty much it.
All right. Now you haven't competed.
And then hopefully, you know, get a title shot. That's pretty much what, you know, every fighter wants.
So it's safe to say
every businessman would be wanting to get paid. Either way, I'm more of the fighter part because that's the reason why I take fights on 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah, this thing came together with Stipe pretty quick. He was taking on Soa first, and then Dana's explanation was the fact that Roy's term is up, his last fight is up, we have to give him a fight ASAP, in essence.
Yeah, because they're good guys.
Okay, fair enough. You haven't competed, though. Let's go back to the Stipe fight momentarily. You haven't competed outside of Canada since you fought for Bodog way back at Costa Rica in 2007. Any nerves competing out of the country, or is it just same old for you?
Unless you guys maybe get, I'll try to stay away from the poutine.
The poutine. You'll stay away from the poutine? Come on.
I have to stay away from the foreign food.
What's wrong with the Canadian food, man? Come on.
No, I'm just saying that's usually what the problem is when you go into a foreign country is you have to stay away from the foreign, you know, the foreign food.
You make it sound like we're like across the globe here.
Uh-huh. But I go to Mexico and eat me some tacos, though.
Wow. It's like that, huh? It's like that. Okay, well, that's fair. All right, let's talk about this fight here in Winnipeg real quick. We've got Misha Tate coming on the line here. Talk about the performance you're expecting to have against Stipe Miocic because he's been out of action since September, lost to Stefan Struve. What kind of fight are you expecting when you get to the MTS Center in Winnipeg?
You know what? He went on a tear, you know, in the UFC. You know, he was 9-0, I think, until he fought Stefan. And then I think he's taken some time off to get better. So I'm expecting the best Stipe I've ever seen.
All right, let's close this off by nailing this thing, killing all the rumors and all the hearsay. Bottom line, Roy Nelson wants to stay with the UFC. He doesn't want to shop his services elsewhere. He wants a title shot.
Yeah, no, I've been crying about this title, or at least I want to fight, you know, Cain Velasquez. I don't want to, if I have to go through all, you know, 24 or 25 fighters on the roster, we can start from the front or we can start from the rear, and I think the rear is Cain Velasquez, so I'll start with the Vs.
Okay, and with a victory over Stipe, should that guarantee you a title shot?
Anything's possible with the UFC. You can come off a loss and still get a title shot. So,
very good point. As always, my friend, thank you very much for joining us. Give my best to Jess.
I will. Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
There you have it, Roy Big Country Nelson. And now we'll be joined by a certain Misha Tate, the Cupcake, who's had quite the tumultuous week, to say the least. Misha, what's going on?
Hey guys, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just dandy. Happier than a clam at high tide.
The last time you and I ran into each other was a couple of weeks ago, I think when Johnny Bones Jones competed, and you were still there. Brian, your boyfriend, Caraway, actually went back to the hotel, but you stayed at the post-fight press conference, and it was all over. I get a tap on my shoulder. Lo and behold, who's saying hi to Shodan Joe? It's Misha Tate.
Right? Of course.
Now, did you get back safely? I'm assuming you did?
Yeah.
Now, it's been a crazy week for you. Let's be honest for a second. Where were you when you first got the information that you needed to fly to Vegas to speak with Dana White?
I was running meaningless errands. I was driving around in my car and, you know, Dana White pops up on my phone and I'm like, oh my gosh, I always get a little bit nervous when Dana calls me, you know, because I figure it's going to be something worth him calling me over. So, you know, I answer the phone and I was like, what? Hello, Dana, what's up? And he's like, hey, I need to talk to you. Where are you at? I'm like, I'm in Washington. What's up? And he's like, no, he's like, I need to talk to you in person. So I'm going to have you fly out here to Vegas. I need to talk to you, like, in a couple hours. Like, I need you down here right away. Can you do that? And I'm like, yeah, of course, you know. Sure, boss, I'll be right there. And so, yeah, Donna called me, booked me a flight. I went down there. He brought me into his office. And word for word, he sat me down. And I don't know if it's good news or bad news at this point, but I'm praying to God, and my fingers and my toes are crossed. It's good news. And he goes, I wanted to sit you down, talk to you face-to-face, and tell you, so you know, how serious I am, word for word. And he dropped his voice just like that. And I'm thinking, oh, crap, it's bad. Like, this is going to be bad news. I'm totally nervous at that point. And then he looks at me and he goes, how would you like to coach the next season of Ultimate Fighter? And he's all happy. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, of course I freaked out and I was so excited. And he's like, hey, he's like, you know, yeah, congratulations. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Kat Zingano blew her knee out, and he just kind of filled me in on everything from there. But, you know what I mean? It was definitely one of the happiest moments in my life. You know, I don't know. I can't really put words to it. It's all happened so fast. It hasn't even fully set in today. Hasn't even fully set in even today. And when I walked out and I saw my team for the first time and I got to kind of coach them a little bit, it was like, is this really happening? And sure enough, you know, I'm here and I'm stoked.
We're on the line right now, UFC Central, with Misha Tate. You can follow Misha online at Misha Tate. That's M-I-E-S-H-A Tate. Talk about your coaches. Who did you bring on as coach or to help you assistant coach in this this upcoming season?
Well, obviously, Brian Caraway, my boyfriend and partner in crime. You know, he's been my coach for the past 6.5 years, my whole fight career. And he's amazing on the ground. He's quite a practitioner. He's got solid wrestling, and he's tricky, and he's a great coach. He breaks things down to a simple way that everybody can understand him, and I love that about him. Then I brought on Eric Chaligi. He's my strength and conditioning coach and my nutritionist. My thought kind of behind that was, you know, we have women on this season and they don't cut weight as well as men, and potentially having to make weight more than once, you know, I really felt it was important, not only for the girls, but the guys too, to have someone that can answer their questions about nutrition, can help them with, you know, personalized strength and conditioning programs. And a lot of athletes tend to overtrain and want to make sure that doesn't happen for anybody. One of our athletes did tell us, you know, they felt that was a problem coming into the house. So, you know, that was my thought behind that. I'm also going to bring in Ricky Lundell. He's a world champion in jiu-jitsu, just phenomenal. He's worked on a couple other seasons of The Ultimate Fighter, and him and I actually grappled together in the Worlds back in 2008, went over to Switzerland and grappled together in the FILA Worlds. So we got him. And then last but not least, we're bringing in Master Tong as our striking coach. And, and then possibly two other wrestling coaches, Jack Anderson and Shane Jamie, that are Shane Jamie's a two-time NCAA national champion, and he's also a 135er, so he can definitely get in there and mix it up with the you know, our team, be size relative. And, yeah, I think that's what we're doing.
Well, it's safe to say those on Team Misha Tate will have some great coaching. We got 2 minutes to go before I got to head to a commercial. I want to ask you two quick questions. I'll fire them off right to you right now. Number one, what are you expecting from Ronda Rousey as you begin filming this new season? Because I've got a feeling she won't be afraid to get in your face. And the drama, there's going to be drama as is, because they've got guys and girls on the same teams. So the second part of the question is, how do you plan on dealing with some of these athletes that are basically, you know, once they get, you know, knocked out of the competition, there might be some hijinks in the house. And obviously there's certain things that could take place between a male and a female that could ruin a fighter's career.
Yeah, you know, I've already preached to them, you know, that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I was like, I don't want to have to be your parent. I don't want to have to tell you guys the right decisions from the wrong decisions. I was like, I want you guys to be smart and don't get carried away with the whole, you know, reality show of things. You know, keep your eye on the prize. You guys are all here to be world champions, you know what I mean? And you know, hopefully they take that to heart, and hopefully they listen, and you know, they keep a good like I said, eye on the prize. As far as Ronda and I go, you know, so far it's been all right, but I'm sure, you know, there's going to be some moments where some drama is going to happen or whatnot. But as of right now, she seemed pretty cool towards me, you know, and I've, you know, been all right towards her. But obviously she has it out for Brian. I don't know what the deal is, but she just, you know what I mean? She's just ribbing him, you know, ribbing him in the public eye whenever she can. But as soon as she sees him, she's like, what's up, homie? So, like, she's like, I don't know if it's like a false nice or what. I'm assuming so, but she's never really the one to say something to your face. It kind of seems like, you know, she kind of lets it, you know, trickle down through the media. But I don't know what to expect, you know. I really don't. I'm going to kind of wait and see and let her kind of make the first move, because, you know, I'm not really there to start, but, you know, if that's the way it's going to meant to be, or the way it's going to go down, you know, I'm just going to kind of have that filling out process at first, and we'll see what happens.
I really wish we had more time to discuss this, but we do have to run to a commercial. Thank you for joining us. First time you actually on UFC Central Radio. You've been on UFC Central Television numerous times, but Misha, thank you very much for joining us on short notice.
Of course. Thanks, Joe.
There you go. Misha Tate. Follow Misha on Twitter, at Misha Tate. And, of course, Roy Big Country Nelson. You can follow him via Twitter as well, at Roy Nelson MMA. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to hear from Alex Ricci about his upcoming fight with the Substance Cage Combat. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Special thanks to 40 Sons for this theme song here, Hurricane. You can download this on iTunes. You can also subscribe to this show here, UFC Central, on iTunes. Just do a search, UFC Central, or go to sportsnet.ca/590. You can also subscribe to the RSS feed and never miss another broadcast, because who knows who's going to show up. As I mentioned, or as you heard earlier on, Roy Nelson joined us off the top. Then we were joined by Misha Tate, and now we are joined by Alex Ricci. You can follow Alex online at Alex Ricci MMA. He is competing at the Substance Cage Combat debut show 1.0 in just a couple of weeks. Alex, what's going on, my man?
Hey, Joe, how are you? Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
I don't think I had a choice, though. I think Riccio behind the glass there was like, you better put Alex on the show soon. I was like, all right.
Tell him I say hi. He's a good guy.
He's giving the thumbs up right now, but we're going to be on our best behavior, because if us three begin talking, no one will understand what we're talking about. So let's get down to business here. First things first, last fight, Kevin Moran, I was there. It was a decision, a unanimous decision, though. It was a great scrap. It was a good rebound from the fight you had with Jesse Ronson, because that was a super tough fight there. Talk to me about the changes you made after fighting Jesse to prepare for Kevin.
Well, I'm constantly always trying to improve my game and evolve as a fighter. And my ground and my wrestling game, and including my striking, are my main focus, right? Clearly, my ground is my weakest link, and I'm basically studying and dedicating my whole life to improving every single day, gaining small gains.
So then you take on Kevin, and that took place last November, which is another story altogether, because it drives me nuts that there's no real MMA in Ontario, but I'm glad it's coming back. So that was back in November. Talk about lessons learned from that fight, because it was a 15-minute fight.
Yes, it was. It was a tough fight. Kevin Moran was definitely a gamer. He came out swinging, and he took me down, which surprised me, because I really worked on my wrestling game, and I wasn't too happy with my performance. My strategy was to, outstrike him, and I found it very awkward to deal with such a wild opponent. And those are some of the obstacles I had to overcome facing Kevin Moran. But I came out with a win, and, that was the main thing.
Now, you're taking on Derek Gauthier next. Has the fight been confirmed, though, with the commission?
Yes, it has been confirmed. The contract is signed. I'm ready to go. I'm in training camp right now, so I'm excited. This is going to be another exciting opportunity, and I'm working towards bringing an exciting fight to the crowd. And, I'm just excited that I'm able to fight again in my hometown, because, like you said before, MMA in Ontario has kind of gone downward, and we need local shows to build up the local fighters in this town. We got so much talent, and with no fights, with no promotions, it's going to be tough to bring that talent up.
The difficult part in Ontario, though, is just the way things are run here. Do you ever get to the point where you get frustrated, where you actually want to leave the province to compete?
Yes, I've been doing that my whole career, especially in my Thai boxing career, because MMA has just been legal for the last couple of years now, and throughout my Thai boxing career, I've always had to travel, and I was always the underdog. So, it was a great experience. I love traveling. I got to see many different places, but at the same time, it's important for me to fight in my hometown. I love Toronto. I love Ontario, and I'm proud to be Canadian, and I want to represent.
Now, taking on Derek next, what's your scouting report on Gauthier?
He comes from a great camp, and I've been studying a little bit some of his last fights, and he's a gamer. He loves to strike. He has a little bit of wrestling. He has a slick ground game, and most importantly, he comes from one of the best training camps in the world, which is TriStar. They got such an amazing team, great organization, and hey, he's going to be ready for me. So I've definitely got to bring my A game that night.
What's the perfect fight for you against Derek? The one that's going to get put you on the UFC's radar and say, you know what, okay, this guy's getting close. This guy's going to make it to the big show.
I gotta perform at the highest level, producing knockout reel footage. That's what I gotta focus on, is putting on exciting, entertaining fights that keep the fans on the edge of their seats. And that's what I'm all about. I'm an entertainer. I love to entertain. I love to show excitement, and that's one thing that I love to bring to this sport.
And one thing I want to ask you, where are you doing this camp? Who are you training with?
I am all over the place. I just finished 3 sessions today. This morning I was at Bank Fitness. This afternoon I was at Extreme Couture. And then this evening I was in Parabellum. I scouted out the best training partners in the city, and I am bouncing around everywhere. So, hey, I enjoy it. It's been a great experience. I've met a lot of great people, learned so many different styles and techniques by going and traveling at different gyms. I also train at Grant Brothers MMA, my own gym, M1 Thai Boxing in Woodbridge. So I'm all over the map. But hey, I'm really enjoying my training camp and how it's going.
Well, there's a very good chance. I mean, something crazy would have to happen for me not to be at your next fight. But I'm telling you right now, I will be there unless something crazy happens, and I look forward to it because every time you fight, I guarantee you that I'm on the edge of my seat, so I could imagine what the fans are thinking. So best of luck. I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Joe.
There you go. There he is right there, Alex Ricci. He is taking on Derek Gauthier in a couple of weeks. Substance Cage Combat. Go to their Facebook page for all the information. Lots of good fights. Adrian Woolley's going to be headlining that card. It's going to be a great scrap, a great event. Grassroots MMA here in the Greater Toronto Region. And there's so much more that happens across this country. I mean, just look at Alberta, Calgary, Edmonton. They've got so much MMA there. British Columbia is changing. The Provincial Commission is almost done. They're going to appoint a commissioner, or at least a couple, in terms of how it's going to run there. But soon there will be Grassroots MMA in BC as well. And this province, hopefully Ontario, will eventually catch up and allow more promoters to hold events. It's a different ball game. It's run differently here than it is anywhere else, but you never know. If it continues to run like this, maybe it'll get better. If it changes, it may get better as well. That's a story for another day. Now, I'm joined in studio by my producer, Igor Enriquez, who apparently gave me an excuse in between the break about why I'm the one who apparently messed up and not understood his text about Misha and Roy.
It was a complicated text. I can see how that was a little bit of a mess up, but it all worked out in the end.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
UFC 160. I'm assuming you watched it last Saturday?
Yeah, great card.
Heading into the TJ Grant fight versus Gray Maynard, what went through your mind? How did you break down that fight? Did you give TJ a chance to win?
I gave TJ a chance to win, but I'd be lying to you if I didn't think that Gray was going to... I thought Gray was going to pull out a decision victory. I didn't think TJ was going to do what he did and knock him out in the first round. I don't think anybody thought that was going to happen. I think I heard you say that you thought that TJ was going to maybe pull it out, but more towards maybe the third or get a decision. I was surprised. And, you know, great for TJ. He did a great job. He knocked out Gray Maynard. I think it's the first time he got stopped
in the first round.
It's a big victory, and he should do well against Benson.
So Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia's finest, obviously Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, and TJ Grant. And my argument is this. Around the world, I'm betting more people know that TJ Grant, that Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia belongs to TJ Grant than Sidney Crosby, because Canadians, in my article I wrote this, Canadians are very myopic in terms of myopic, whichever way you want to say it, when it comes to hockey. They think the whole world watches hockey. They don't. But the whole world watches MMA. So sooner or later, I'm betting TJ Grant's going to be the star of Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia internationally, maybe not as big in Canada or in the U.S. where there's pockets of hockey. But man, TJ Grant is the man. And I had a chance to hang out with him after the event. He actually pulled me and the Team UFC Central crew aside to discuss a whole bunch of things after the fight. This was way after the press conference and way after the Dana White scrum. This guy is jacked. He's ready. And I can tell you one thing. Originally, when I thought TJ Grant versus Ben Henderson would be a kind of difficult fight for TJ to deal with, I don't believe that anymore.
So you think he has a legitimate shot of dethroning Benson as champion?
Yeah, big time. After what I saw against Gray Maynard and what he explained to me in terms of what he expects in the fight with Ben Henderson, I cannot wait for that fight to go down.
Now, let me ask you. Originally, the knockout of the night was supposed to go to Junior DeSantos for that crazy head kick he got on Mark Hunt And then Mike Tyson sort of somehow managed to get Dana. Now, what did you think on that? Because I'm sure Junior must have thought, you know what, he deserved the extra 50 grand.
Well, the Canadian MMA fan in me was ecstatic, right? The analyst in me thought to myself, well, wait a second. Yeah, Junior's knockout was spectacular. It was a third round spinning wheel kick. Great, love it, whatever. But Hunt was pretty much done at that point there anyways. He was going to knock him out regardless. TJ did to Gray Maynard, like we talked about, that no one has ever done before in the first round. Like, he just, not only did he take the abuse from Gray Maynard in the cage with those punches that were landed, he kept egging him on, saying, come on, come on, come on. I thought to myself, I remember sitting there, I was one, two, three or four rows back from the octagon, and thought to myself, what are you, nuts, TJ? You got to move. You can't do that. That's insane. Gray Maynard's going to knock this guy out. What's going on here? And he kept saying more, more. And the next thing you know, he turned it on, and then he finished Gray Maynard. It's crazy. So the caliber of talent that TJ Grant defeated versus the caliber of talent that Junior Dos Santos defeated. Yeah, Mark Hunt's done great, great story. Got to where he was at in the heavyweight division. But at the same time, Gray Maynard is higher ranked in the division, more respected at lightweight than Mark Hunt was at heavyweight.
Fair enough. So now they seem to have Kane versus Junior 3, which is, again, the trilogy bout, one win each. Now, did you think that was a right decision on Dana's part, or do you think that they should have had another bout? Because I think Kane destroyed Bigfoot, like most people thought he probably would. Junior won his bout. Did you think there should have been a mix in there at all?
No, I like the decision, because when Kane Velasquez lost the title, he got to fight Bigfoot to earn the title shot. And Dana said, once Junior lost, he gets a title shot if he defeats Mark Hunt or Alistair Overeem. So I think it's fair. They get the trilogy bout. Many people have long stated that these two guys are going to fight five times in their careers. I'll tell you one thing that's going to happen. If Kane Velasquez beats Junior Dos Santos, they won't fight five times in their careers. That could be the end of this rivalry.
That's fair. And another guy that I thought was great was Glover. I think Glover Teixeira was absolutely amazing, and he's looking like a really big threat in that weight division. I don't know what you think on that, but he looks really for real.
Yeah, I think Glover and Phil Davis may have a date in the future. But the one thing that I got to learn about Glover, now Glover, this is the first time I ever had a chance to interview Glover in person. Let me tell you something about this guy. This guy's the greatest. He's the funniest guy you'll ever meet. And he would stop me after the interview throughout the MGM and literally stop me just to say what's up, say hi. Like, I only saw you 4 hours ago, or I saw you yesterday. And we're just talking, just regular guy chit-chat. He calls himself a Brazilian redneck.
A Brazilian redneck.
He is a Brazilian redneck because you know what he loves to do? Landscaping. He loves to be outside in the lawnmower with a he loves chainsaws. He likes building things. And the guys are, he told me, he goes, I'm a redneck, Joe. I'm a redneck. And the one thing that he does in Brazil, he lives in a small town in Brazil. And when he goes to his mom's house, he's a rock star. And then when they have the barbecues there, he told me it starts at 10 in the morning and it goes to like 2 in the morning. And his brother is the only guy on the grill all day.
Wow.
Like, imagine, I feel so bad for his brother, because Glover is saying, you know, man, I'm sitting there and drinking my beer and blah, blah, blah. I thought, this guy is the best. This guy's the greatest.
And he's got that pre-fight ritual of watching Mike Tyson highlights before he enters the octagon, which is pretty interesting.
Well, and then imagine when Chuck Liddell is sitting next to Mike Tyson, and Glover's been training with Chuck Liddell for years, and then Dana allows Mike Tyson to come in the cage. Glover was like a little kid. It was unbelievable. It was great to see.
It was definitely awesome.
All right, we got to wrap this up because got Jordan Breen coming up next. Sherdog.com's finest. But thank you very much for jumping in here. Appreciate it.
No problem, Joe.
There you have it. Igor Enriquez. You can follow Igor, SN590? Igor SNET590. I forgot. Whatever. I follow him. Doesn't matter. All good. All right, coming up after the break, Jordan Breen from Sherdog.com. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, thank you very much to 40 Sons for the anthem for this show. Hurricane, you can download it on iTunes. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes. Just look up UFC Central or visit sportsnet.ca/590 and subscribe. You will never miss another episode, and you'll get another disastrous reaction if you listen to Roy Nelson and Misha Tate and Alex Ricci, who joined us earlier on the show. But now I am joined by one of the best, if not the best, analyst that this sport has to offer. People think, people always look at me. No, you need to look at Jordan Breen. You can follow Jordan Breen online at Jordan Breen via Twitter. He is one of the best and one of the guys that I pay close attention to, if not for his analysis, for his intelligence, and for the comedic flavor. Plus, he's an old school hip hop fan, so that's all that matters to me.
Oh, dude, you're so flattering. You're coming on so thick. I feel like I have like a standard to live up to now.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Talk about standards. TJ Grant defeating Gray Maynard last Saturday night had both of us sort of raising our eyebrows. But let me ask you this. Before you watched that fight and it went down, in your analysis, how much of a chance did you give TJ Grant?
I thought he was like worth betting on at plus 170, plus 180 around what he was out there at on the betting lines before the fight. But it was a fight where you always have to be given some pause with Gray Maynard. He's such an exceptional wrestler. He's definitely a guy that could have potentially taken TJ Grant down, stuck him to the mat, tried to win the way that Donghyun Kim won, Ricardo Almeida won in fights against TJ Grant at 170. So knowing that and knowing Gray Maynard's ability to land big hard punches as well, I think a lot of people were willing to see TJ Grant as a live underdog, but not willing to invest the faith he was actually going to get it done. I thought if the entire fight was a kickboxing match, I felt confident that TJ Grant would get his hand raised, but I never would have anticipated that kind of firepower and being able to put Gray Maynard away in such an incredible, dominant fashion so early on in that contest.
Does it change your perception now with TJ now heading into that title fight with Ben Henderson?
I mean, it's so hard to imagine someone knocking Ben Henderson out. I mean, Ben Henderson's been hurt before. He withstood the Showtime kick. You'd have to go back to his amateur career very, very early on in Colorado. He was knocked out by Chad Clillingsmith in like a Ring of Fire show years ago. But this is a guy with an incredible durability, both in the submission game and when it comes to his imperviousness to punches. So, I don't think you can forecast TJ Grant to be a massive, like the massive chance that he could win the UFC lightweight title with a knockout. But I think at the very least, it changes kind of the perception of at least how effective of a striker he can be. And when you've seen how guys have had success against Ben Henderson, whether Frank Geiger, Gilbert Melendez, guys who've been able to put their hands together in combination and give chase have had success. So it's at least reasonable to think that whether or not TJ Grant could get a massive knockout against Ben Henderson, stylistically, he at least offers something that should give the champion pause.
Does it have a 25-minute war written all over it?
Oh, it absolutely could. I mean, we can't bank on Ben Henderson to go cutthroat for a finish. He has a great guillotine. He's definitely a guy that can finish fights and finish fights suddenly. But definitely since attaining the title and facing elite guys fight in, fight out, especially guys who can come forward and box like Frank Egger, Gilbert Melendez, we've seen him circle more, kick more. So I think it's going to be up to TJ Grant to kind of stalk forward and probably to stop Ben Henderson's takedown. But I still don't think I can see a finish. TJ Grant, really good guard variations, has an awesome butterfly guard, can sweep really well. And Ben Henderson, never a guy that gets on top and controls fighters. He gets powerful takedowns and either clings to a rear waist lock or goes crazy with ground and pound. Let's guys scramble back up. So I definitely think we're in for 25 minutes because I think if either guy can explode with offense, I think the other guy's kind of got some cause to escape. So I definitely think we're bound for 5 rounds whenever TJ Grant and Ben Henderson gets put on the schedule officially.
And it's looking perhaps that it's going to happen in August, likely at the Boston show, the UFC, or the Fox Sports 1 show. So that's the rumor right now. Heck, if it happens in Toronto, I'll be smiling ear to ear, but I can see Benson Henderson and his management pulling out the champion card on that one, saying no. We're not fighting TJ in Canada.
Well, I mean, there's a million places they can do this, too. I mean, UFC 164 in Milwaukee still doesn't have a main event. So there's definitely some flexibility. It would seem kind of maybe impatient to push it all the way up to mid-August. But at the same time, if TJ Grant and Ben Henderson are both comfortable with that, it's not the craziest thing in the world to have a title fight on that kind of turnaround. Just because of the standard has become to wait 4 or 5 months doesn't mean that's something that needs to be rigidly adhered to. I'm not gonna look a gift horse in the mouth. Ultimately, if we get two elite guys in the best weight class fighting each other on an accelerated schedule, more lightweight fights, so be it. I think that's a pretty good gripe to have.
Here, here. All right, listening to Jordan Breen right here on UFC Central. Make sure you follow Jordan at Jordan Breen via Twitter. The headline of the week thus far, in my opinion, has been this whole Ultimate Fighter coaching switch with Kat Zagano going down with an injury blown to her knee, or her knee blown out, basically, as she was doing some, I believe it was plyometrics, if I'm not mistaken. And Misha Tate steps in, and her rivalry with Ronda Rousey continues. What did you make of all this news when you first heard of it?
Not surprising. It's not exactly the first time we've had a coach get injured while training via the Ultimate Fighter, so no real surprises there, I don't think. Unfortunate, of course, for Kat Zingano, but ultimately, I think on some weird level, the UFC kind of maybe gets the best case scenario. Certainly, we never want Kat Zingano injured, but by virtue of the fact she had a good fight with Misha Tate and convinced all the people she was a contender, people are definitely willing to see her as someone that they're comfortable facing Ronda Rousey anytime. Misha Tate, though, people basically assumed before that fight that the real fire to be had was to have Misha Tate have a rematch with Ronda Rousey and build up that rivalry to the show. So they get to establish Kat Zingano as a contender, albeit one who has a compromised knee, and now they actually get to go ahead with the reality TV aspect and try to push that rivalry between Misha Tate and Ronda Rousey as effectively as they can. And good. With 135 pounds on the women's side becoming deeper now, I mean, it's feasible. We see it all the time on the men's side. It'd be no different on the women's side as depth accumulates. You know, one bad fight, maybe Misha Tate's out of the contendership picture for a long, long time, and they never really get the chance to kind of go forward and push that particular fight. So I guess on some level, there's maybe a silver lining for the UFC, and they ultimately get now two fighters to fight Ronda Rousey, where they only had one before. It should probably make for better television, though, assuming like those kind of squabbles are the things that you're into when it goes to reality TV.
Yeah, I think that'll drive the ratings up if they start off on a bad note, at least the first two or three episodes. Then again, many of us expected Chael Sonnen and John Jones to be completely different than what we saw unfold here on Sportsnet when that season aired. I still got a bad taste in my mouth with that one, but is what it is. And speaking of the UFC light heavyweight champion, he recently tweeted that he saw a doctor about his toe and he has decisions to make. I thought nothing of that tweet other than perhaps John playing with his following and with the media. I think it means nothing. I just think it means he's going to be competing within 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, that's more than likely the case. I mean, they've got a history with injuries with John Jones, his thumb/wrist fiasco before the Rashad Evans fight, which was handled fairly terribly. I think at this point in time, he and his management know how to deal with an injury a bit better at this point in time. I don't expect John Jones out for any, like, you know, elongated point of time. It's not like this guy's laid up doing nothing. He was just in Moscow, Russia over the weekend, showed up at the Alexander Emelianenko Bob Sapp show. So it's not like this guy's just laid up in crippling pain or anything like that. As you mentioned, I think that's kind of a reasonable timetable to expect him back in the gym and just doing light work.
Do you think the Mahler will get the shot, Alexander Gustafsson, or Machida actually step up and get in there?
I mean, it'll just come down to the whims of the UFC, I think. I don't think either one, I don't think, would be surprising. I wouldn't be surprised, though, to see them go with Lyoto Machida. Again, going to the idea that Gustafsson's going to be around for a while and they can probably fund in the showcase fight for him to build whatever hype they possibly could. After all, he is coming off of an injury. It wouldn't be the nicest thing in the world to have to get rushed back against John Jones. So I would probably be anticipating Machida more so than anything else, but I don't think that either one can really surprise here. This is basically where the UFC's at when it comes to John Jones. They just have to pick somebody. In general, it's not going to be seen or really perceived as any different. The emphasis is going to be on whether or not when John Jones goes in, wins another fight, if they can turn it into a pay-per-view buy rate over 500,000. That's ultimately going to be what people care about with John Jones at this point in time, until they can drum up the kind of opponent, whether at 205 or at heavyweight, they can get people really, really excited.
What about Glover Teixeira and Phil Davis? Are these guys destined to compete against one another next? And how far do you think one of these two will be getting closer to John Jones, sort of thing?
Oh, well, I mean, Phil Davis, I think some people are still kind of have the Rashad Evans fight fresh in their mind. So
yeah,
Glover Teixeira, those are the kind of fights he's going to have to win to get back into that kind of conversation. He at least has some crossover penetration. He's got his Sprite commercials and so on and so forth. So maybe it's ultimately a fight they feel comfortable pushing from a desirable opponent perspective for John Jones. Glover Teixeira is still probably a fight or two away. I don't know if there's any perfect opponent for Glover Teixeira, but if you do look at the upcoming Winnipeg card, some of the fights happening with a lot of veterans at 205 pounds, the winner of Dan Henderson, Rashad Evans, I think could be appropriate. And if you're looking for a fight that could carry weight in Brazil to some extent, the winner of the Rogério Nogueira, Mauricio Shogun, Hua rematch could also be viable. So when it comes to Glover Teixeira, or really matchmaking for Phil Davis, there's definitely guys on the docket immediately that are going to win fights, going to be looking for opponents for later in the year. And if you're trying to establish guys, I mean, the guys with the biggest names who are happening to have their star fading a little bit are going to be the most viable guys anyway. So I think that kind of crop who happen to be fighting on the UFC card in Winnipeg come June might be maybe the most viable options for Glover Teixeira or for Phil Davis.
Final question before we wrap up the show. What do you make of the Anderson Silva or the report of Anderson Silva having a rib injury as we get closer to this Chris Weidman fight?
This is always the drama with Anderson Silva. It always comes out at some point, whether it's after the fight, just before the fight, mid training camp, that Anderson Silva is injured in some particular way. I think the fact of the matter is, even if he is, we're not going to get any clear sign until after the fight's over. That's always been how it is, whether or not he's injured or not. And it always tends to be the controversy just gets wrapped up after the fight. Very, very few guys are obviously going to disclose injuries and just talk about training through it or anything like that. So if there actually is any confirmation to be had, we're not going to find out till after July and that kind of thing. However, we're still far enough away as well that if there is an existing injury and Anderson Silva is trying to modify his training camp, take time off, I wouldn't be surprised if there is really something here, just because we're so far away and there's so many ways to aggravate that or to raise further concern. You know, maybe it's a situation that continues to get played in the coming weeks. Typically, these are things, whether the Travis Luter fight, being injured prior to the first Chael Sonnen fight, these are typically rumors that tend to leak out when fight week comes around, not typically weeks and weeks out from particular fights. So it's definitely something to kind of keep your finger on the pulse on. But Anderson Silva has such a wild and crazy history when it comes to the folklore about his injuries going into fights and then the confirmations thereafter, that it's, I think, maybe worth cocking an eye at more than anything at this point in time.
All right, as we say goodbye, am I going to see you in Winnipeg?
Yes, you will. The Peg. You absolutely will see me there.
And then hopefully I'll see you in Cole Harbour in Halifax if we get out there to do a feature on TJ Grant. As always, Jordan, never enough time, but thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be on with you, dude. A pleasure. Hope to see you out here in the 902 as well, sir.
The 902, and I'll be out there hopefully sometime in July or August. There you have it, Jordan Breen. Follow Jordan online at Jordan Breen. Thanks to Jordan. Thank you to Roy Big Country Nelson. Thank you to the Cupcake, Misha Tate. And, of course, thank you to Alex Riccio, my boys behind the glass, Danny Riccio and Igor Enriquez. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.